720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, high above Chicagoland on what is another beautiful day. Ashley is in the booth. Ashley, you know, we could just keep saying it's a beautiful day. We've really lucked out on our days. The weather has been awesome. Are you going to say yeah?
Yes.
All right, good. All right. We've got a great show on tap as well. We mentioned a little bit with Scott before we went into the news, and they are in studio. Our first guest, and we previewed them as well, Chef Debbie Gold from Tide House. We've got Derek Hull, the executive director from the Trotter Project. Guys, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
You know, you mentioned it off the air beforehand, Derek, that can you believe that we're, you know, 4 years, 5 years old here? I think, you know, on one side, it's sad because it all means you don't have a Trotter Project without the passing of Charlie Trotter. But the work that the Trotter Project has done, that you guys have done, is absolutely amazing.
It's extraordinary. I mean, as you said, we're 4 years old as of June, and it's hard to believe. We were in studio a couple of years ago with you, and we're celebrating currently right now around Chicago Charlie Trotter Days, and that's the fifth annual. It's incredible stuff.
It was tough, right? And it was tough to really kind of put some sort of measure on the impact, the importance, kind of the footprint that Charlie had. Not only, of course, here in Chicago, we knew, you know, it was, you know, you mentioned Chicago, you mentioned food, you mentioned him, but around the world. And as you travel, and for the listeners, we think of, and rightly so, that of Charlie Trotter as our very own. We take ownership of him as a personality, as one of our Chicagoans, but he is really the world's, right? And you are traveling around the country with us. Are you kind of surprised as you go places that are as far away from Chicago as you can be that, that he still is that important?
We're blown away by, you know, all of the stories from the alumni, from the supporters, you know, not just here in Chicago, but around the country. As you mentioned, we're doing a dinner series in New York and Los Angeles that's going to take foot here in Chicago in October. And it's just, you know, when the restaurant was open for 25 years, there are over 800 alumni, and they all have gone on to do extraordinary things in their own right and wanting to give back to the Trotter Project and our mission of really providing mentorship and scholarship opportunities to deserving young men and women.
And talk about some of the different ways. I know you participate heavily in Chicago Gourmet. I know you have for a long time. You've made some great relationships, not only in the business community, but also on the charitable side as well. So, I mean, for those people, and we're going to talk about a specific event with Chef Debbie Gold that is coming up, and we'll go deep into that as well. But in general, like, what ways are you kind of shaping the ways that not only those great alumni, but also people are participating?
Yeah, we've got, we just launched our first summer camp this past year in Englewood, and that was incredible. We had so many great alumni and support. Chris Dealey and Kevin Hickey from the Duck Inn, for example, participated in that. Debbie Gold was part of that summer camp. We took the kids to Grid City Market and taught them about sustainable food. It was just absolutely incredible. And now to have our second year of scholars going into school, we have a pastry student at Kendall College who's doing an internship right now at Tide House. It's remarkable. We get the stories from not just here in Chicago. He has a lasting impression on so many of the seasoned veterans, not just here, but around the world.
On the top of the letterhead, it says Trotter Project opens doors through education, mentorship, pursuit of excellence in the global culinary and hospitality industries. Derek, as you are there kind of carrying the torch more than kind of, and the last time you mentioned you were in, it was with Charlie's sister. Is there, because I think there are so many ways that people will come out of the woodwork. You mentioned the alumni. We'll talk about them. But also just in general, people that are fans, enthusiasts on the culinary side, and certainly respect Charlie's legacy. How do you shape what it is that you do? Do you take it from the things that he was either interested in or passionate about when he was here?
You know, he was, you know, not just a chef, but a civic leader. He, you know, gave back to community. That was something that was so important to him, right? And he had the lessons in excellence. And so that's what we developed into our Pillars of Excellence program, which has that mentorship and that scholarship give back piece. And, you know, so many of the chefs, not just here in Chicago, but around the country and worldwide, are wanting to get involved in giving back to that sense of community. So it's extraordinary. We've got, you know, we are one of the official charity partners, for example, right here in Chicago with the Chicago Tribune Food Bowl. And we've got amazing things happening with Au Cheval and in St. John, which is really a legendary restaurant in London that pioneered the snout to tail movement. And that currently launched at Au Cheval and goes on through next Saturday. And a portion of the proceeds go back to our Pillars of Excellence program. It's great.
As you travel for these events and people attend them, I mean, I know some of it is coming from you, ideas. is that you guys and the people involved in the leadership for the project. But do you have people coming up to you, like wherever you go, saying, hey, we got to get together, or I've got an idea for a project? I'm sure that must happen.
It happens all the time. We were at Pebble Beach Food and Wine, for example.
That's not a bad gig.
Not a bad place to be. And, you know, the ideas were just popping left and right. And now we've got some really great sponsors as a result of that. You know, our kids, as many of our listeners, you know, around the city, the kids are going back to school soon. And so our kids, you know, they are in deep need of, you know, equipment and supplies. And so one of those sponsors, based on that conversation back in Pebble Beach, is donating back to school book bags. It's incredible. So it all links back to the mission, which is great.
So many links. And it is kind of that tree of the alumni. And they are so engaged and passionate and excited to help. You know, we've got, you know, you've got Bill Kim, I think, was in, you know, Matthias Burgess, Graham Elliott. There are so many. The list goes on and on. And one of the really great ones here in Chicago is, again, is Chef Debbie Golden. So when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about a specific event that is coming up, like you said, that is linking some legendary restaurants from around the country with some great ones here, some amazing chefs. So keep it here. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hey, what's up? This is Leah Pritchett, driver of the Papa John's Top Fuel Dragster for Don Schumacher Racing, and you are On the Road with Dane on WGN.
One more ride. Race. We go all out. We don't play. One more ride. One more race.
720 WGN On the Road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and excited to have in studio. Before we went to the break, we talked a little bit about some of that alumni for Charlie Trotter, you know, one of the most revered and beloved chefs in the history of the culinary world, certainly Chicago as well. And what is, I think, special about his legacy and what he has left is this engaged alumni, as Derek Hull, executive director, who's in studio, mentioned it, right? It's almost like having this army of people ready to kind of, you know, get together and support great causes and help that next generation. In studio, you know, we're from, you know her from Top Chef Masters. You know her from the James Beard Award. She's done it all in Kansas City. She is back home, and great to have her here at the Tide House, the one and only Chef Debbie Gold. So, Debbie, it's great to be back in Chicago, number one, right? So talk a little bit about that. And nothing against Kansas City. Was there any reservations? Because they gotta miss you. It's almost like, let's say you have a pro franchise and you win a World Series, you know, with that team, but you wanted to go play for the Yankees, right? And now you're here.
Well, you know, I guess there's always a homesickness no matter how far you go. So it was always somewhere back in my head that eventually I'd come home. So I just figured it out.
Yeah, you look at some of the things, and the as far as the project Tide House, it's off the charts. You know, everybody has been super supportive, as you probably knew, at least hoped that they would. And so excited. We're going to share information about the event that's coming up with the Trotter Project. But your relationship with Charlie Trotter and all of that, are you surprised at all that as time has gone by, how you and the rest of, let's call them, the alumni, have really kind of hung together and supported all these efforts?
No, I'm not surprised at all. You know, it's a hard job, the restaurant industry, being a cook, being a chef, even the front of the house work is, it's all a team. And so I think that team mentality always stays with you. And again, you know, the opportunities, I guess, that kind of open when you can put on your resume, I worked at Charlie Trotter's restaurant. And, you know, after his passing and knowing of the work that the Trotter Project is trying to do, it's kind of a given that it's like, why wouldn't you want to be involved?
So this specific event, Derek, if you want to give some of the details, it's going to happen at the Tide House, but Debbie is not only going to be front and center, she's got some great company.
Yeah, I mean, this is just something that kind of is very exciting for the Trotter Project. We're bringing in one of London's top chefs from St. John. They really are the pioneer from the snout to tail movement. And so wanting to give back to Chef Charlie Trotter and his continued legacy in supporting the Trotter Project. And so we're doing, for all intents and purposes, an epic pop-up at Tide House with Debbie Gold. It's going to rock.
And you look at, you've got, it's going to be Jonathan Woolway, Trevor Gulliver. You've got AJ Walker. What is that like, too? Debbie, talk a little bit about working with some of these other chefs. I mean, a lot of chefs can be, you know, you guys are artists and you've got your own way that you want to do it. Is it fun to do collaborations, or is it more like, I hope they don't necessarily kind of, you know, get in on and maybe disrupt some of the things I was hoping to do?
No, it's always a lot of fun. I've actually been able to host guest chef dinners for many years. And, you know, it's fun because you get to meet people, when we're in our restaurants, it's kind of like we have blinders on and we're on, in our own little world. So bringing people together with different experiences and get to spend some actual time with them and see how they do things and why they do things is also kind of a learning experience. And usually everybody gets along. There really is very little ego involved. And it's really more of, what are you doing? Can I help you? What else do you need? You know, and it's a fun way of networking, especially, I think, for people, the young cooks in my kitchen, you know, to be able to see that and you know, it's the 15 minutes of fame kind of thing where, oh, my God, Jonathan Woolway from St. John's. Right. And, you know, a chance to meet him and talk to him, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. So it's going to be fun for the chefs, but it's going to be an amazing once-in-a-lifetime experience for the people that are doing it. It's part of the CT Chicago Tribune Food Bowl. So, Derek, talk about some of the things people are going to enjoy at the event food-wise.
I mean, so Debbie can talk more specifically about the food, but it's going to be truly a once-in-a-lifetime mashup, as you mentioned, with the food. You know, just having Chef Woolway, you know, over here in the States, this is, you know, he doesn't come here that often, and he's coming here specifically for the Trotter Project and partnering up with Chef Debbie Gold as part of the Chicago Tribune Food Bowl. It's going to be an extraordinary, a lot of fun, and a delicious time.
And the tickets are available on the Lincoln Hall and Shuba's website. $125 for an event like this. That is great. And it looks as though we are going to have two tickets we'll be able to give away during that break right before we go to news to the fifth caller. But wait, don't call in yet, and we'll give that information before we go to break. The menu for the evening, it looks like it's going to be pressed pig's ears and chicory. It's going to be grilled cauliflower with burrata and pumpkin seed roast bone marrow and parsley salad, swordfish, quail, corn custard. There's a lot of stuff here.
It's going to be great. You know, when I talked to AJ and Jonathan, I said, give me something that's going to make you shine. And that's the way I put the menu together for them.
The dinner, 7 p.m. on Tuesday, August 21st. So it is coming up pretty quick. And when it comes to Tide House in general, this event's going to happen. It's going to be sold out. You know that. But talk a little bit about the restaurant and the kind of things that you have there on a regular basis that people enjoy and kind of what you brought in studio today.
Oh, well, the restaurant is, you know, everybody says, what kind of food do you do? And I'm always American food. I mean, it's contemporary American, I guess. You know, it's a way of doing nice quality product, I think, in a casual atmosphere. We're very laid back there. It's a beautiful restaurant. They, in a sense, spared no expense to build this gorgeous thing. And it kind of spoke to me where and what the menu should be. So that's how I kind of created it. But I'm always about, you know, come in, enjoy, use whatever fork you want. Meredith Rush put together a beautiful wine list. We have amazing cocktails. We are also attached, literally, to Shuba's. And I'm just beginning to kind of dabble with that menu. We put in a brunch menu, and that leads us to what I brought in for you today. It's from brunch today. We do like a morning breads thing. So everything I do is homemade. So it's babka. I've got a sour cream coffee cake, banana bread, homemade jam, some really good farmer butter, you know, just some nibbles.
It looks amazing. And the website for Tide House, too, so people can get in there, see what's going on, not only for this event, obviously, but for things going forward. What's the website?
The website's TideHouseChicago.com.
TideHouseChicago.com. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to give away those two tickets, 312-981-7200. The fifth caller, Ashley, if you can be ready, we're going to have two tickets to this once-in-a-lifetime event coming up. It's going to be a Tide House, and it's coming up on the 21st of August. So stay tuned for that. 312-981-7200. You can call, and we'll give our winner out after the break. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Wes Henderson with Angels Envy, and you're on the road with Dane at WGN.
WGN 720 WGN on the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high atop Chicagoland. And when it comes to some of the top things going on in the food world, in the beverage world, in the restaurant world, the chef, the culinary world, oftentimes they're happening here in Chicago. But there are some places that I think that are just a road trip away that have some of the best stuff out there when it comes to bourbon. It is Louisville. It is Kentucky. And it is oftentimes Angels Envy. He is in town with us, the one and only co-founder of that great and well-revered brand, is the one and only Wes Henderson. Wes, welcome to WGN.
Great to be here, Dane. Appreciate it. I was throwing rocks up at the window to get your attention, and I appreciate you letting me in the door.
That's a pretty nice arm, considering we're 18 floors up. That's pretty good. So I think you should try out for the local affiliate there.
I'm in. Which team should I try out for, Dane?
I don't know. Who do you want to be?
Do you want to answer that question, really? Should
the Mighty Cubs need some middle relief.
Okay.
So
I'm going to stay away. I'm a long-suffering Reds fan, so I'm not even going to get into that debate.
Hey, they're going to be in town soon, I think, right? They often play the Cubs, and so hopefully you could get in there. And we don't have a huge rivalry with the Reds.
No, I don't think so, but I brought that up. I was here for a concert last year, and I was in line at the concession stand and talked to a guy and told him I was a Reds fan. I thought they were going to kill me out there, but I didn't really think there was a beef. And I think you're right. There probably isn't. Maybe it was just that particular guy. He had a bad day. But, you know, I mentioned the Reds, and I thought, oh, no.
Well, Kyle Schwarber is a huge Reds fan, you know, and he is one of our great players. And so thank you to the Cincinnati fan base for that. When it comes to the fan base for bourbon, you are a tireless ambassador carrying the torch, not only for the spirit and the expression itself, but specifically and understandably for Angel's Envy. What brings you to Chicago this time?
I'm here to do some seminars at the local Benny's stores. They've got some really good programs. We'll invite some of their top customers in or whatever, and they sell tickets, and we about 30 or 40 people in a small venue, very personal venue. We'll sit down, we'll talk about bourbon and, you know, share lies and war stories, and it's really a lot of fun because it gives me an opportunity to get close to folks and answer questions and really promote the brand in a setting that is really conducive for that.
We were talking a little bit off the air, you know, and I think there's a couple different things out there in the food, beverage, spirit world that have that same kind of affiliation where people see the people that represent that brand as celebrities, as kind of superstars. As they want to get there. They want to come to the events. They want to talk to you. Want to ask questions about it, you know, and the products. Barbecue is like that as well, right? You know, people want to meet those people that are behind it. So when it comes to bourbon, what is it, Wes, that makes it? And I know that it has been more popular than ever, and certainly there are more people getting excited about bourbon than maybe ever before. But what makes bourbon one of those things where people want to get to know how it's made, why it's made, all that history, the legacy, and people like you?
You know, growing up in the business, it was never like that. You know, my dad was doing this for almost 40 years and before we started Angel's Envy. So it's still always very surprising to me to see that evolution. And you know, it's just the spirit, Dane. Bourbon has so much history. It's got so much going on, and the relevancy today with a wider group of folks. You know, the demographics have changed. More younger people are drinking bourbon. More women are drinking bourbon. So we've just got much of a much wider landscape than we had before. That's really what it is. And bourbon's a fun drink. It's very versatile. You know, you can do a lot of things with it, a lot of cool cocktails. So it's kind of the best of everything combined. And it's nice to identify particular people with different brands, I think. It kind of makes it personal. And, you know, people can come to the distillery, they can visit with the family, they can hang out with us. And, you know, that's part of the allure.
Well, and not every brand has that. Somebody that has not only your history with the brand, co-founding, of course, your dad, Lincoln Henderson's, you know, history within spirits, all that kind of stuff. There are very few brands have that. They'll have a brand ambassador. Maybe they'll have a celebrity spokesperson, right? But they don't have somebody that has been in and around it their entire lives. And you have been a big believer in, and, you know, as you see Angel's Envy's stuff out there, and certainly it is appreciated for what it is on the spirit level, but also you're a big believer in getting out there, in collaborating with folks, in events, participating in events, and putting Angel's Envy out there front and center to get more fans.
You know, we've never had a national advertising budget. We're not folks to go out and do that type of marketing for our brand. It's very hand-to-hand, very organic, and that's what's worked for us. And, you know, and it's fun. You know, it's fun to get out and do these things. So I was home for a couple months over the summer, just kind of recharging. And by the end of my vacation, you know, not only was I ready to get out, my wife was about to kill me. She's like, you know, when are you going back out on the road? So it felt like it was just good time, you know, to hit it again. So now between now and the end of the year, I'm out all over the country.
And so what is the feedback? You know, what do they tell you? I know that it would be Wes make more, right? And I know that you guys have worked on that as far as trying to make things more available to more people. But what is that feedback? Is it just, hey, we love what you do? Or is there some kind of input that you actually, I guess, take down, write down, distill, if you will, and kind of put into play?
I'm always listening to what folks have to say. Right now, the big thing is make more. We're on allocation.
But that's a nice problem to have.
It's really not bad. There's a fine line there to balance that. You know, I've told the group last night, I thanked them for their patience because Angel's Envy is a little harder to get. And I said, look, hey, it's your fault. If you didn't drink so much of it, you wouldn't have this problem. So don't blame me.
That's the answer.
Exactly.
It's like abstinence.
That's not the answer.
Rationing.
No, but unfortunately, that's what we have to do in this particular case. We have to kind of stretch the supply. And, you know, but the most important thing is keeping it in the right places. You know, Angel's Envy to me is not something that's on every shelf and every bar around the world. It's in the places that have an appreciation for super premium bourbon that will treat it with that type of, deference in a good word for it, because that's a little highfalutin. But you know what I mean. Places that they're interested in bourbon, that want to promote bourbon, that's where we want the product to be. We don't want it to be everywhere.
I think that's really important. And is that part of maybe the side effect or benefits, or maybe even reason that you travel the country, travel the world, is to keep your hand on the pulse of the public for stuff like that? Because I think it is important to be able to know from a brand perspective where you belong, where you want to be, right? And then kind of go through those motions to get that done, whether it's specific events where you feel that it helps. It's a win-win for both. It adds something to the event for sure, but also it brings Angel's Envy to places that maybe it needs to be. You talk about events and where Angel's Envy should be. There are a couple events coming up that we are really excited about. One I have been a part of since basically it has begun. And for all the different events out there, and even all those that have a charity angle or for kind of high level culinary events or just things that people really like and get excited about, Cochon and Cochon 555 is one I've been, you know, involved since the beginning. I've been a judge and ambassador. I've helped out in every way at a bunch of different events around the country. Grand Cochon is coming to Chicago. It's going to be here for the second year. Typically, it was out in Aspen as part of the Food and Wine Classic, but we've got it here and we are super excited. It is going to be an amazing event, bringing kind of champions from all those cities around the country to Chicago for the 10th anniversary of this great event. And you guys will be there front and center as well. Talk about that.
We are, and it's one of those things that's really exciting to be a part of, and to be able to kind of bring the brand and be a part of something that's so phenomenal and be a part of that is our first involvement. So we're going all out.
I got to tell you, as somebody who knows both brands, Angel's Envy and Cochon, it is a perfect fit, because it has got every level of enthusiast. It is, you know, you'll see people in like cocktail dresses and you'll see people in like t-shirts and jeans. It has got a very cool vibe. It has a very high end vibe. This is not, it's not a, you know, a cheap event to attend, but it brings in, I mean, it's the who's who of chefs from around the country participate and vie for it. It is a title they really want to win. It's a perfect place for Angel's Envy.
For sure. And we're spending more and more time in the culinary space because, as you know as well or better than anyone, how versatile bourbon is like that. So it's a great match. You know, we'll talk a little bit about Bourbon and Beyond, but doing something there as well on the culinary side. So all those things together really work well for us.
Yeah, Chef Spirits and a great cause as well. Cochon 555 and Grand Cochon coming up here in Chicago in September. September, it doesn't stop. And this is one thing that you've done. I know you are a huge, not only a sports fan, obviously, you know, we've got the tales of the right arm and the 18 floors as far as throwing the rock. But when it comes to music, you're a huge fan, and you have realized that a lot of the fans of music and of specific artists and events and music events are also bourbon fans, right? And so Bourbon and Beyond.
Absolutely.
And this is going to be an absolutely amazing event. I've known about it, looked forward to it for months. It is coming up in September as well. Talk about, and this is right in your home. It's a home game.
You know, Louisville is, and you're right, it's a home game, which is, it's very strange to say that growing up in Louisville, to see these types of events be in the city, because we didn't have those things. You know, the restaurant scene's exciting in Louisville now, the bar scene's exciting. Now the music scene is starting to be really, really part of what we do. But bourbon goes so well with music. You know, there's no better match. So we're very active in Bourbon and Beyond, and you marry bourbon and music and food together for one solid weekend, you know it's going to be a good time. And the artist lineup is incredible. So I'm a music guy too. So it's like the best of everything for me.
Oh my gosh. I don't know how you get any work done. And to let the listeners know, and again, we'll have a link up for that event as well. But you've got, you know, Sting, right? This is a great, you know, Robert Plant's the music of Led Zeppelin. You've got Lenny Kravitz, John Mayer. And that's just some. I mean, like you said, it's an entire weekend. There are so many people playing. It's almost like too big of a lineup. That's crazy.
It is. And once again, it's not something you would normally see in Louisville. So, and it has draw from around the country, and we'll be front and center and all that promoting Angels Envy. And you're going to come, right?
Yes, we will be there.
Yeah, so it's going to be a blast. So if you know, I think there's still tickets available if you want to jump on down there. It's a short drive, 5 hours. It's four if you're riding with me.
More like it's 40 minutes if you're riding with Wes like on the Angels Envy Force One.
That drive, I tell you, that's a beautiful drive, but the flight's nicer.
It is a beautiful flight. You mentioned it. However you get there, right? That there
just
is more
come and see it
to offer and more to experience in Louisville than ever before. Listeners to the show know for our road trips, transformative travel, family road trips, get in the car and get out there. Louisville is just, man, it's an easy one, right? It's only 5 hours away, unless, again, of course, you're traveling with Wes. And then it's a lot shorter. But once you get there, Louisville is one of those cities that has, regardless of maybe this event or that event or iconic events, right? Like the, you know, Kentucky Derby and things like that. It has become more things to more people on the food side, entertainment side. It's a place to go.
Louisville is really more of a place to drive through or to come visit for Derby, like you mentioned. So now with the restaurants and the bars and the hotels, you know, we didn't have hotel capacity really to accommodate visitors. So the city is finally catching up, and our distillery, our beautiful distillery, I have to mention that, TripAdvisor has us as the number one attraction in the city of Louisville.
How is crazy is that? And you don't even have a Ferris wheel.
I know. We're looking, though. I talked to my team the other day and said, look, we have to have a Ferris wheel. I think I'm going to take the one here back with me.
I'm just going to say, right, because out of our studio windows here, you can see Navy Pier and you can see the Ferris wheel. That is the number one attraction in Illinois, believe it or not. And it's got a Ferris wheel. So I'm thinking that's maybe where you got the idea. But talk a little bit about the new place, you know, because think about this. A distillery, a tasting room as the number one attraction there. I think it's high praise, right, for what it is that you're doing. There's a lot to see there.
There really is. And the distillery is the only full production distillery in downtown Louisville. We're right on Main Street across from Slugger Field, which is the AAA ballpark for the Cincinnati Reds. There are several other experiences, other bourbon experiences downtown as well. So you can come and see us first, certainly. And there are other folks. Old Forster just opened. I went to it the other day, a beautiful home place that relies heavily on the history of Main Street and Bourbon Row or Whiskey Row. There are several others right downtown. So you can make a weekend out of the food, the bourbon, the music, all those things in Louisville. You can come on a Friday, leave on Sunday, and leave very fulfilled.
So you get an opportunity, and of course, Wes is in town sharing what it is that he does with us. A bunch of different events that are coming up, and some of them are amazing in here in Chicago, and some of them are amazing and in your hometown. You've got another one that I know Nikki, who is with us, wants to share that's coming up that is free, open to the public, and a great opportunity for people to get up close and personal with Angels Envy.
It's going to be great. Nikki Allen just joined our team. Incredible. I've known her for years, and the fact that she's part of Angels Envy is so exciting. But Nikki's putting together a great event, and I thought it would be great to have her come in and talk about it.
Yeah. So, Nikki, what's up? First, congratulations. You're part of an amazing team. You know that, I hope, so far. And excited to have you here based in Chicago sharing everything that's going on.
Thank you so much for having me. I have the coolest job title. My job title is a whiskey guardian of Angels Envy.
That's neat. That is really
cool. That's on my business card.
I don't know. You know, you got race car driver, astronaut, whiskey guardian.
Whiskey guardian.
That sounds cool.
So I get to do a lot of cool events with Angels Envy. And in September, which is actually National Bourbon Heritage Month, we partner up with the Arbor Day Foundation, and we have a program called Toast the Trees. What we do is actually plant an American white oak tree for every hashtag Toast the Trees. And I am launching the Chicago event at 2 West Erie in River North at the Dana Hotel on the rooftop, Apogee Lounge. It's open to the public. I'm buying everyone Angels Envy drinks.
Nice.
And if you guys come out and you guys do that hashtag Toast the Trees, we plant a new tree that will one day become bourbon barrels.
And that's right. So it's a great tie-in. Trees are great. Everyone loves trees, and we need more of them. And obviously, they provide oxygen. But also, you mentioned specifically to that type of tree, that's the barrels, right?
Yes. I mean, to be bourbon, that qualification is that it needs to be put in a new white oak American barrel. And to do that, we have to cut down these trees. And with deforestation and the way that these barrels can only be used once, we really want to give back to the environment and plant a new tree.
That's cool. You guys are at one with nature, you know, sustainable and all that. One last time, the hashtag, the location, how people get more information, come out and see you.
So the hashtag is hashtag toast the trees. For every hashtag, we will plant a white American oak tree. And you guys can come see me at Apogee Lounge, 2 West Erie on September 1st from 2 to 4 p.m.
Sounds good. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
Wes, give the website out for people to get more information and come and see you in person down there at the distillery.
Come to the distillery. It's angelsenvy.com. You can reach me at KY Bourbon Maker on Twitter and Instagram. I love to interact with fans of the brand. It's so exciting. And, you know, Dane, it's really unbelievable, this journey that we've been on, and the fact that we have folks that are so excited about what we do and will come to visit and, you know the family and love what we do. It's the most rewarding, exciting thing I've ever been a part of.
The last thing, we do this with pretty much absolutely everybody. Now, of course, you travel either the West Henderson, like the Madden Cruiser, right? Maybe you have a luxury bus and, of course, the G6 and all the ways that you get around in the fastest way possible. But when it started out, like, what was your first car? We ask everyone that. Wes Henderson, when your first car happened, what was it? Was it cool or was it something? Certainly there's some memories.
I had was able to drive my grandfather's 1969 Olds Cutlass.
Oh.
It was all electric, which I think was pretty unusual for back then, the electric windows. But that sucker, looking back now, was a very dangerous car for a 16-year-old kid to drive. It had 300 and some odd cc's.
Yes.
And the front end would, when you punch the gas, the front end would lift up off the ground. And so that's what I learned to drive in. So that was pretty cool. I have a lot more respect and excitement for that now than I did then.
Right, right. Oh, that story goes a long way, and a lot of people with that as well. So thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for coming to Chicago. Thanks for coming to WGN.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me, Dane.
Hi, I'm Larry McReynolds with Fox NASCAR, and you're listening to On the Road with Dane Neal, WGN Radio.
And 720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Allstate Skyline Studios, high atop Chicagoland. And as we are 18 floors up, and I'm not sure actually how high the Bristol Motor Speedway goes. It is one of the most amazing and unique facilities in all of sports, and certainly in racing. And a guy who's on the line with us, talk a little bit about things that are happening coming up this weekend. Actually coming up tonight is world champion crew chief. He's part of that great broadcast team for NASCAR on Fox. You see him on Race Cub, and he was one of the most knowledgeable and insightful voices in all of motorsports. It's the one and only Larry Mack. Larry McReynolds, welcome to WGN.
Oh, glad to join you. Appreciate you having me.
Did you notice, too, that we threw a little AC/DC in there? Not every race fan knows that Larry Mack has an affinity for AC/DC, but we put it in there for you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I like all kinds of music. I may be listening 1 minute to AC/DC and then flip it over and listen to Conway Twitty. I don't discriminate, but I am an AC/DC fan. That's a given.
Yeah, and also a Renaissance man and one of those great voices. Now, everybody, and you'll say it, especially when you put on your analyst hat or your, you know, your crew chief hat or any of those things, is that every race is the same. You got to get out there. You got to win. The points are the same, regardless of where you're racing. But Bristol is a really special place.
Well, it's probably one of the most unique racetracks, not only in our country, but in the world. You know, it's a half-mile track, and I know there's a lot of half-mile tracks, but it's a concrete surface, and it's banked almost 30 degrees, and they run around there in about 15 or 16 seconds a lap, which still doesn't sound that hard, but put 40 cars out there, as I've heard many drivers say, they feel like a pilot flight and a jet fighter around a gymnasium when they're out there running 500 laps. That's probably the biggest thing is 500 laps. I know my colleague Darrell Waltrip, who won there 12 times, said you lose a feel of where you're actually at on the racetrack. You don't know if you're on the front stretch or the back stretch unless you look up and see the flag stand. So, yeah, it's a fun race. It was really the original Saturday night race. For years and years and years, it was the only race I know when I came into the sport in the early 80s. That we actually ran under the lights on Saturday night. They used to actually bring in makeshift lighting from Musco where they could have enough lighting to broadcast it. And then, of course, as we went along and times grew, more and more tracks put in lights, and we had more Saturday night racing. But Bristol, I know it's one as a crew chief I always look forward to, and certainly look forward to it now being a broadcaster.
When it comes to the drivers, too, DW, of course, winning 12 times, he's got to love it. But the way you describe it, Larry, it doesn't sound like that much of a place where you'd have a lot of fun. It's a lot of damage, a lot of cars. You're in lap traffic every single second, regardless of where you are on the track. Are you surprised at how much the drivers love the place? I mean, at least a lot of the drivers, they have different kind of levels of success, but it's always an exciting event.
Well, the drivers do love it. I think a lot depends on what kind of night you have there. Obviously, whoever goes up on top of that media center tonight and enjoys Victory Lane, they're going to really love it racing there this weekend. It can be feast or famine. I've been there. I've had several races where we were very successful there. But I also hauled a lot of carnage out of there as a crew chief. And you think about how fast they're going to be going around that track. Kyle Larson sitting on the pole, Chase Elliott on the outside of the front row. One of those guys grabs the lead, and we don't have an early caution. They'll be catching the back of the field probably before about lap 15 to 20, so they'll be in lap traffic. I know being up in the broadcast booth and you look down there, it's almost like a conveyor belt of race cars. Unless you really are zoomed in on who's leading the thing, you're not even sure which driver's actually leading the race because it's just a continuation of race cars around that half mile.
Well, with you guys and some of the technology in the broadcast booth, you help keep people up to speed. But I can imagine as drivers, you wouldn't know necessarily what was going on. Just try to keep it on the track, keep it straight. You mentioned Kyle Larson on the pole. You got Chase Elliott in that first row as well. Now, if you go kind of flashback into last year, Kyle was one of those guys that up until the last few weeks was kind of challenging for the opportunity for maybe even a championship or something. And now he's kind of had a little bit of trouble. This would be his first victory if he's able to win here at Bristol. Is it the kind of thing where is Bristol the kind of place where, you have to either you're successful there and you're good at it, kind of like a road course, or can you just get off the schneid and go out there and win no matter what?
Well, yeah. The one thing about Bristol, not to discount aerodynamics, aerodynamics count everywhere we go. They're still running well over 100 miles an hour into those straightaways. But it is more about just the mechanical grip of the race car. And we talked about Kyle Larson. Just look at the drivers that's won at Bristol that's still looking for their first win of 2018. I think about Kyle Larson. I think about Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, Jimmy Johnson. Who would have ever believed we would be 23 races into this year and that list of drivers and several others would be still looking for their very first win of the season? But when you've got three drivers like Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex Jr. that's won 17 of our 23 races, that tends to block out a lot of people. And I think we all know, and watching practice yesterday, and Kevin Harvick said it earlier in the week, that if you're going to win this race tonight, you're probably going to have to get the key to Victory Lane out of Kyle Busch's uniform pocket because he certainly owns that place. He had a rough night last night. He sat on the pole for the Xfinity Series race, was leading it, and cut a right front tire down and hit the wall. But, yeah, Kyle Busch's success there, I think he's won like close to 20 or right at 20 or 21 total races at Bristol Motor Speedway. He's definitely become the man of this era when it comes to racing at Bristol.
Well, Larry, you mentioned the big three, and it has been amazing how those three drivers have gotten all of these wins so far. If it wasn't for the other two getting so many, Kyle Busch, I think in any normal year, he'd be running away with the thing already. He's been unstoppable.
Yeah, he has the six wins, but I think he has about that many, if not a few more, second-place finishes. I think he has something like 12, 13, maybe 14 top two finishes. But that's what's been really fun about this year. And, I know some fans are actually complaining about three drivers dominating the series, but I think it's something we should celebrate. We've got two drivers at least, maybe even three, but two for sure when you look at Kyle Busch with six wins, Kevin Harvick with seven, and we've got 13 races to go. They could actually get into double-digit figures as far as wins. And when you look at the competition today, that's amazing. Jeff Gordon in 1998, he won 13 races. And in the 20 years since, only one other driver has won double-digit wins in a single season. Jimmy Johnson in 2007, one of those championship years, he won 10 races. And think about
this, the fact that we've got two, possibly three drivers with 13 races to go that could get double-digit wins, to me, it's an amazing thing, especially when I look at the competition that's out there week in and week out.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's crazy. And, okay, you think about this. Some of the young drivers, and as we've had over the last handful of years, some of those iconic drivers step away from the track, and people are going to have to step up. And, you know, Chase Elliott has been one of those that people have said, hey, when is he going to do it? And you talk about second-place finishes. He has been there. You know, he's you know, right up there in the front row now. And, of course, you worked with, you know, Dale Sr., and you had, you know, Dale Jr. come up after that. Where do you put Chase Elliott there talent wise? You know, he's got that legacy and all the kind of help and guidance that you can have. He's grown up at the track. Does he have a chance to be maybe as good as his dad one day?
Well, he certainly seems like he has the talent. He's won in everything he's ever raced in. He's an Xfinity Series champion a few years ago driving for Dale Earnhardt Jr. And it was certainly a big deal for the sport, for Chase, for Hendrick Motorsports. They broke a very long winless streak at 37 races when Chase won at Watkins Glen a couple of weeks ago. You know, yeah, we've got the young talent pool that we have right now is amazing. The list just goes on and on and on, even including drivers like Kyle Larson and Austin Dillon. Of course, Austin won the Daytona 500. You think about Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, who won at Daytona a few weeks ago. Think about Daniel Suarez. I look at William Byron, Alex Bowman. Our young talent pool is amazing, but nobody knows it more than they do. They have to start winning. That's what the fans pull for. You know, that's something that Kyle Busch did early in his career. Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Ryan Newman, Jeff Gordon, they all won and won multiple races when they were very young in their career. And I think that's what a lot of our fans are kind of taking a step back and go, who's the next guy I want to pull for? Especially when you look at the number of drivers that's retired recently and in the midst of retiring. But these young guys, they've got to win races. We can only promote them as young, up-and-coming drivers for so long. They have to find victory lane, and they have to find it on a regular basis. But, yeah, I think if Hendrick Motorsports kind of gets it stepped up, which I know they will, the Chevrolets get a little better than what they've been this year with that new Camaro, there's no question I think Chase Elliott can visit victory lane many times.
Let the listeners know we're talking with Larry McReynolds, the legendary Larry Mack, champion, crew chief, and, of course, part of that great Fox broadcast team. You mentioned in the midst of retirement, and I wanted to ask you, too, and maybe it's part of, and we have drivers come on all the time that say, you know, talent is one thing. You definitely have to have that, but you got to have the equipment, too. And moving over from Hendricks, Casey Kane, it looks as though it didn't seem like he was going to retire last year. He was going to try to ride it out, do what he could. He said he's had enough. Your thoughts on Casey's career, and is it because he just doesn't have that frontline equipment to work with every week?
Yeah, it's been a rough go for Casey this year, you know, driving for that 95 car for Levine family. Only one top 10 finish. He finished in the top five at Daytona a few weeks ago. But I think the biggest thing, Casey has just not been having fun. You know, Casey's a racer. He's a very competitive racer. He's won 18 cup races. He won the Coca-Cola 600, one of the toughest races to win, three times. He won the Brickyard 400 at Indy last year. And, you know, I don't want to say his career is not complete, because winning 18 cup races is really quite an accomplishment, but he's just not been enjoying it. And when you don't run well and you're a real racer, it's hard to have fun. And I'm a firm believer that even though our life on this earth seems like it's a long period of time, in the grand scheme of things, it's a very short life. And you need to have fun. It doesn't matter what you do. If you're driving a race car, if you're a broadcaster, if you're a radio personality, if you bake pizzas for a living, you need to enjoy it. You need to wake up every morning and look forward to what you've got coming up. And obviously Casey had lost that. Still a very long, I think, successful career. You know, a lot of people are kind of questioning me on a regular basis and questioning a lot of people, why are drivers retiring at such an early age? Well, it's because they're starting much earlier. You know, when I first came into the sport back in the early 80s, cup drivers didn't even really start running in the Cup Series till they were almost 30. Think about Joey Logano. He's probably the biggest example. Joey Logano is 28 years old. This is his 10th full-time season in Cup.
Wow.
So, in other words, when he's 38 years old, he would be racing in Cup for 20 years. And that's a long time with this grind. I know people think these drivers just go fish and golf and hunt and just hang out at the house Monday through Thursday, but that's to the contrary. Yeah, they're at the race on a race weekend 38 times a year. There's testing. There's competition meetings. The sponsorship obligations that they have are endless. And when you start doing it in north of about 15 years, it becomes quite a grind. But I think the biggest thing, these guys are starting so young that it seems like, yeah, they're retiring early, but it's really just because they're starting at such a young age.
Yeah, and if you're used to success, that is part of your fun too. And when it comes to fun and motorsports, whether it was there, you know, right next to the track as a crew chief or in the broadcast booth, Larry McReynolds, you bring fun to so many race fans around the country. So I can't thank you enough for taking time out, jumping on today. Give some information where people can see and enjoy what it is that you do on a regular basis once we're off the phone.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, as we know, NBC, they have the races now. We hand it off to them the end of June when we ended up our broadcast season with Fox and FS1 out at Sonoma. But still, I'm in the FS1 studio on a regular basis. Whatever day the race is on, if it's a Sunday, we don't do Saturday races, but I'm in there like starting next week when we go to Darlington, or in 2 weeks, because next week's actually an off week. But whatever day the Cup race is on, you can find me on race day on FS1. It's a pre-race show that we do throughout the year. I do Race Hub on Monday nights. Of course, Race Hub is on FS1 Monday through Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I co-host a serious radio show, The Late Ship with Brad Gilley, every Tuesday night. It's either from 7 to 10 Eastern or 9 to midnight Eastern Time. So even though I'm not at the racetrack like I'd love to be, like we are in the first half, I'm still staying very busy with Sirius and with FS1, but come Daytona in February, I talked about life being short. It goes by in a hurry. We'll be back at Daytona in February with Fox and FS1 starting our 19th year of NASCAR on Fox. That's that in itself is kind of hard to believe.
Oh, the best in the business. He is there. He'll be glued to his television set, as all of us will be in America. Larry, thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
I appreciate you guys having me. Y'all have a great rest of your weekend. And good. I heard them promoting about the Bears. Good luck to the Bears this weekend.
All right, they need it. All right. Thank you, Larry. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up. And we've got some White Sox stuff coming up. So keep it here on the road with Dane here on 720 WGN. Don't miss Chicago Tribune's first ever night market. Enjoy food, fun, and entertainment August 24th through the 26th. To learn more, visit ctfoodbowl.com/night market. And we're getting ready to send it off to for our White Sox coverage. And when we were talking a little bit about it, it was great to have Larry McReynolds on. He was talking about the Bristol Night Race, Bristol Motor Speedway in Tennessee. And Ashley, our producer, had thought that maybe, she's like, is it the Bristol Renaissance Fair? Which actually is a great road trip. This is a road trip that will not take you long, yeah, maybe 45 minutes. Of course, you have to come up with a great costume and some cool stuff. So, you know, Ashley, in like 10 seconds or 15, 20 seconds, talk about the Renaissance Fair. You guys go all the time.
We've gone every single year for the past 5 years or so, and I just love going because if you shout huzzah, they all shout it back.
You have a turkey leg in your hand, and you know, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of sweaty people out there. We went one time. We'll definitely do it again sometime. Right now, though, I want to thank everybody listening to the show. Thanks to everybody who participated, and it's get ready for some great White Sox coverage. The news, as we get towards 3:30 p.m., is sponsored by Builders Supply Outlet, and here's Bob Kessler.